I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, March 20th, 2020, and this is episode 60 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. First announcements. The survey is still going on, so podcast listeners, please fill out the survey if you haven't already. I would really, really appreciate it. It ends at the end of the month. To fill it out, go to lpenelope.com/survey. Really easy to remember. And I will try to remind you again before it closes. But learning more about you and how you got here and all the stuff on the survey would be really helpful to me. So thank you in advance. Or thank you if you've already done it. So this week's best thing. I really, really enjoyed Debbie Allen's dance class on her Instagram Live. I didn't think to check if it's archived somehow, but if it is, I will link to it if you can still participate. And it was so much fun. I haven't danced in forever. I grew up dancing. I did ballet for umpteen years, jazz, tap, hip hop, African, all kinds of different styles of dance all through childhood and into my 20s. And then as an adult, I did jazzercise and Zumba and, you know, all of those cool things. I've been really thinking about digging out my Zumba DVDs and doing it again after this dance class because, you know, the gyms are closed for the global pandemic and I can't go climbing. I can exercise using the equipment that we have, but cardio is always tough. I don't like cardio. I don't like the elliptical. The rowing machine is okay, but they're just so boring. I don't run. I tried running and my knees told me no. And my ankles told me hell no. But dancing is only moderately antagonistic to my knees. And that's because I haven't kept up with my physical therapy exercises like I should have. Shame on me. So anyway, Debbie Allen's dance class was full of fun. I used to be really, really good at following choreography. Like that used to be a super skill, like a superpower of mine. And I have completely lost it. So when the choreography at the end of the class got a little bit more difficult, I was like, I can't, I don't know. I did not give up, but I was like, I never got it. Although she was having a couple of issues with the teaching, which I'm not here to criticize Debbie Allen in any way because she's a national treasure. But I wasn't quite following along there at the end. I will admit it. Other things that happened this week. Oh, I did a really fun interview over at the Written in Melanin podcast YouTube channel. And shout out to Chelsea and The Case because I was talking with them and it was just really great. We did a regular interview, then we did a spoilery interview, which I don't get to do that much of. I don't get the opportunity to talk to people like a little bit more in depth about spoilers about the book. And so that's always super fun, and they were great, and I highly recommend that you check out their channel and the other great content that they have, and I will link to it. All of my interviews are on my press page of my website if you would like to go back in time. So yeah, that was really fun, and thanks to those guys for inviting me. Writing update. So, good news and bad news on the writing update. Bad news. Let's start with the bad news first, so we'll end on a high note. I was not able to write this week for most of the week. When things first started shutting down and they were like, everybody stay home, I was like, no problem. I stay home all the time. I work from home. I've worked from home for at least the past 13 years full time. And I didn't think I would have an issue. And I don't have an issue. It's not staying at home. But it is different when you're forced to as opposed to choosing to. And then everything closing. I'm in Maryland. And so at some point in the last week, at first it was our county and the county executive closed the mall and closed, you know, the restaurants. And then it was the state. And now I know it's a lot of states. And so, but I don't even think it was that. I think it's just constantly trying to stay up to date and this growing fear, you know, the growing unease. Like, I'm not afraid necessarily of getting sick. Obviously, I don't want to make anyone else sick. But just globally, like, a client of mine was laid off, like, almost all of her company was laid off. just compassion for them. I mean, more so than the project being canceled, because I'm super busy and I'm not as concerned about that at this point. I mean, I'm sure that will be a problem as more and more projects get canceled and, you know, businesses aren't spending money. That's in the future, but more so just the personal toll, you know, like I had worked closely with this woman and I know that she's a single mother with two kids, and it's just the beginning. It's the tip of the iceberg. And I think I've just been down, you know, I've just been really down about the state of things, the state of everything. And, you know, growing worry about not just my family members, my husband, who's a doctor, and knowing that, thinking about what it's going to be like as this gets worse and worse over the course of time, and anger and fear and just feeling down. And so, yeah, I have not really been able to write. So yesterday I sounded the SOS to my friends, my mastermind people. And this morning we woke up early and got on Google Hangouts and just did some sprints. And that got me back into writing. So I'm super grateful. And if I have any advice, it's lean on your community. You know, I was like, the day before yesterday, I was like, I'm going to take Thursday. I'm not even going to open my work email until I've written X, like at least this one scene. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm just going to write. Things are slow anyway. It'll be fine. 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, I'm like, I haven't written anything. I have read an in-depth article on Fiona Apple. I have kept up with my Twitter feed. I've looked at various news sites and read all kinds of articles. I've made lunch, you know, played with the dogs. I did not do any writing. And so at around, I think, 5 o'clock is when I finally sounded the SOS and texted my friends. And I'm like, I can't create right now. And so I understand the importance of being gentle with yourself. And I was kind of trying to do that also, like knowing, I'm not going to call it writer's block because I don't think it was a block. And if you want to call it a block, it's the block that happens when you're depressed, you know, but it's not like I didn't want to write. And it wasn't that I didn't know what to write. It was that I just wasn't doing it, you know, like wasn't doing it, was doing other things. And my emotions were so, and they still are, you know, it's difficult. And so there is that balance between being like, okay, if I can't create today, I can't do it. You know, being gentle with yourself and allowing yourself to feel what you feel, and then feeling that. And at a certain point, you do have to take some steps if you can to get on the other side of it. So that was what my SOS text was about. I think I had felt what I was feeling long enough and I was ready to get back to it. And I just needed a push and some support. And so we got together and wrote on Google Hangouts, which is how I got through NaNoWriMo's and has always helped me, you know, and I've offered that to other people too. And that accountability, someone in your corner, setting the timer, run a sprint for 20 minutes. What are your goals at the end? And then coming on the other side of it and patting each other on the back. And that was super helpful for me this morning. And just that kickstart, yeah, to get me back on track a little bit. I don't know if this is good news. We'll call this in-between news. So working on Requiem of Silence, the fourth book in the Earthsinger Chronicles, and racing towards the end here. Obviously not racing. Sluggishly moving towards the end. I went back through all of my notebooks from the beginning of the series. So I letter my notebooks. I use the Moleskin Kahir Craft notebooks, and I'm on notebook F. I thought E would be the last one, and then I had to do F. I'm almost at the end of F, and I think there's going to be a G, if only for the last novella. So anyway, I went back through all the notebooks and just skimmed through them, trying to make myself feel better about ending this and wrapping things up and making sure that there wasn't anything that popped out at me that I had scribbled in one of these notebooks over the past 7 years, that would be something that could inspire me for the end, you know? And it's really interesting how You kind of look and see the genesis of certain ideas. I see character names have changed because there was a character that was in several pages of one notebook. And I'm like, who was that? Who did they become? Why did I name him that? And why did I change his name? Ideas, brainstorming lists, seeing all of the different brainstorming that I did for various book titles and the name of the magic system, for instance, not Earthsong, but Amalgamation, which comes up in book two. You learn about it. And then, because in my world, there are technically three kinds of magic. There's four. There's four, but one is a combination of the other three. So just the naming of different things. And it was actually really cool, like a trip down memory lane as I information gather and just input as much data into the brain as possible, knowing that it will churn and spit out something that will be hopefully good. Also, as I work on the end and as people are reading Acts 1 and 2, I'm just making notes about things that I need to layer in. So as I come to decisions in Act 3, I'm like, oh, well, I should have seeded this earlier. So I'm not doing any changes right now. I'm just going in Scrivener. I use the comment function, which is like a little sticky note. So I go back into earlier scenes and I'm like, okay, this scene, I need to do X, Y, and Z to set us up for the stuff that's happening at the end, but not making any of those changes. So basically, it's just kind of things that the reader needs to know about, whether it's a location that I want to have some foreshadowing of, a magical thing that you have to know you can do before I get it done at the end. And what is, I think I talked last week about feeling like I was jumping the shark and just hand wavy and making the magic do things it couldn't do. So part of that is because of the world and because a lot of things have been hidden in the world that are coming to light in this book. So it's not as bad. I mean, it would be bad if it stayed the way it is in the draft, but I am having people make discoveries about things that the magic can do and then paying them off later. So hopefully I will avoid the Rise of Skywalker issue where, hey, force healing is a thing now? Like, when did we do that? If you didn't read I heard that it was in some of the original extended universe things. But in the movies that, we saw, that's a new thing. So, like, I know that's an issue. And if I don't make it work and make sense, then it'll be a problem. Hopefully, if I seed it through and you have the explanation that, oh, there's a thing that they used to do back in the day but was lost and now we found it again early enough that when we do it again at the end, it won't feel like it came out of nowhere. That is my hope. And in actual good news, I got feedback from my agent, Sarah, about Acts 1 and 2, and she was really enthusiastic and she really liked them. So that's the good news. If I was leading with the bad news, it's more bad news. I also got feedback from my brother, Paul, about the first 12 chapters, which I think is about the first 25,000 words that he had read so far. And he was less enthusiastic about it. And these are both people that I trust to give me feedback, who have given me feedback in the past. And so when you're in a situation like this where you have opposite feedback, you're like, well, obviously it's easiest just to listen to the person who liked it and be like, everybody else is wrong. Which kind of brings me back to what I was talking about last week and the article that Jeffrey Kennedy had written about writer's block. Sometimes, and even though I disagreed with her, I also agreed with her. Sorry, Jeffy. But yeah, this is one of those cases where I have to decide if I'm just taking the easy path or not, and it's a real conundrum because I can see what my brother is saying. I also know he's only 25,000 words in, but if he's got a problem with the beginning, a problem that, my agent didn't necessarily have, like, what do I do with that? How do I proceed at this point? And so right now I'm just taking his feedback. I'm just, thinking it over. It's in my mind as I'm moving forward towards the end to see if there's anything that I can do to address it. a lot of times when people give you feedback, they give you suggestions. And most of the time, the suggestions are going to be wrong. But the fact that they're bumping up against something is something to take into account. And different people are going to bump against different things. So it doesn't make Sarah bump, it makes Paul bump. I have one other reader who I haven't heard from yet. And obviously, if it makes her bump too, like, and then, but even if it doesn't, you know, I have to still be like, okay, my brother really liked all the previous books. And then there's something happening right now with this. What do I do about that? And also within myself, it's like listening to the feedback, understanding what he's saying, and being willing to be like, I'm okay with that. You know, like, if that's the reaction that some people will have, and doubtless other people will feel the same way, whether it's a small or large percentage, I don't know. Do I stand by what I did? So yeah, receiving feedback is a double-edged sword. I mean, I think it's vital to, for a writer to not just live inside of our heads, because we are writing this for other people as much as we're writing it for ourselves. And then what to do with it, especially when you get conflicting feedback. So yeah, I'm still in the middle of dealing with that. And a lot of it is also just, okay, taking it in, even if I don't do anything about it now, turning it in as is, seeing what my editor has to say. Does it bump for her? Is she okay with it? If she is okay with it, what, if anything, do I do about it at that point, you know? Because you can't please everyone. And the question is, if you've pleased someone in the past and you're not now, but you are other people, it gets complicated. And so sometimes the answer is to trust your gut. And my gut, you know, when I read through it, it didn't stop me. So yeah, just thinking about that, moving forward while that's turning, and maybe there will be an idea for something that is an easy fix. I think the issue is, in this instance, his feedback, there is not an easy fix. It's kind of like a core thing that he's having an issue with. And part of me is like, that's just the book. Like, that's just how it goes. And maybe you just don't like this book. And maybe that's just going to be what it is. You know, I kind of hate to leave it there. But right now, I don't know what else to do about it. So some of it is going to be time. And maybe I turn it in, I get a few weeks or months off from it, and then I come back and have a fresh perspective. That can be hard when you're, you know, dealing with traditional publishing deadlines. And but that's one possible solution to this. And that might be the only thing I can do, because I have time to finish it the way it is. And I have time to, you know, address specific things, definitely, which is why I'm having people read it. But part of having people read it is also just to have the information of, okay, not working for you, like in this kind of big way. I have that, you know, and maybe in a month or two or four, I will know what to do with that. So I don't, you know, I'm grateful for the feedback, positive and negative, to know that, okay, it's not going to hit for some people, and I know why. And yeah, just take that information and let it churn, and maybe my subconscious will do something with it and find some kind of fix that is possible. And maybe it won't, and maybe I'll just have to live with that too. Also, the super long Fiona Apple article in The New Yorker, which I read, and if you're a fan of hers, I recommend it. I'm a big fan of hers. There's a tweet this week about name a perfect album, like one that you don't skip any track on. And all four of Fiona Apple's albums are like that for me. I also listed Cree Summer's Street Fairy, and there was another. Oh, Sleater-Kinney's Hot Rock and Dig Me Out. All of them are perfect albums, in my opinion, in terms of I don't skip any songs on them. I'm sure there's some more, but those are the ones that came to mind. Anyway, article. Great stuff, like just about her process and about, so if you're an artist and struggling with your process, reading about her process, which is years long, like she hasn't had an album since 2012. She's supposed to be dropping one at some point this year. There was a point at which she said something like the long time between albums might be because she wears herself out and needs time to heal in between them, which sounds like burnout. But it also, because her process is just so intense and so iterative and going back and it just sounds exhausting. So I can see why. But there was a quote where she said, I'm doing the nothing that comes before my little concentrated spurt of work. And that kind of resonated with me because of that idea of needing the space in between. And then you take the space and then you binge work and then you take the space, which is just how some people work. I mean, I try to write 6 days a week, and then there are times when I need to take the space, and then there are times when I'm just very prolific. So on a very tiny scale, I really understand that. And I just thought it was a good article about a creative person who talk about blood on the page. You know, you really feel the blood in each song coming from her, the authenticity that she's able to put into her work. I mean, it kind of just blows me away all the time. And the way that she changes as an artist. And so this crazy, intense, exhausting, mentally and emotionally taxing process creates this amazing work from her, in my opinion. But I don't want to work that way. And as much as I believe in blood on the page, her level, it feels way too much. You know, I think about how when I was younger, writing was deeply necessary for sanity. You know, like journaling, writing, poetry. I did those things almost obsessively in order to stay okay. And as that grew, and at a certain point, I didn't need to do that to be okay anymore. And I feel like I can now be a professional about it. So there is a limit. So when it's all just your emotion and your gut spilling out, you can burn out very quickly. And it's difficult to come at it as a professional under those circumstances. But at the end of the day, I'm not happy if I'm not sharing at least a little bit of like the core soul parts of me in my work. But keeping that balance, I think, is the difference between being able to work consistently and being and taking 8 to 10 years between projects. So, yeah. That is what I was thinking about. So try to stay up as much as possible. Allow yourself to be down if you feel down. And I'm hoping that this period is not, I mean, it's going to be detrimental for many people's mental health, but manage the best you can and be gentle with yourself at the end of the day. That's something that I'm reminding myself of, and I will remind you too in case it helps. That is it for me for this week. I will talk to you next week. Please remember to take the survey at lpenelope.com/survey. And for episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, you can go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want the illusion of human contact, you can watch the video episodes on YouTube. A rating or review would make me really, really happy and make you my new best friend. My new best imaginary friend. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more podcasts delivered straight to your eardrums, go to frolic.media/podcasts.